Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
This is a CBC Podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Art. An estimated 300,000 Canadians have epilepsy, a condition marked by seizures. In my career, I've witnessed hundreds of patients having seizures. Their eyes roll back. They lose consciousness. They foam at the mouth. And their arms and legs jerk rhythmically. Sometimes they bite their tongue. Fortunately, most seizures last less than a minute. The longer ones are life-threatening. That is what I see. What the patient experiences is a lot more random and a whole lot more frightening.
The first thing I remember is opening my eyes in the hospital and seeing red, a good friend, and saying, "Did I have a seizure?" And he said, "Yes." And I just cried. I just cried.
That's the CBC's Julianne Hazelwood describing her most recent seizure. It took place 6 years ago, but she describes it like it was yesterday. She's with me in the studio because she's in the late stages of pregnancy, which brings added challenges and dangers for someone with epilepsy. We'll get to that in a moment. Julianne, welcome to White Coat Black Art.
Thank you so much.
I'm curious, what was the last thing you remember before that seizure?
I was at work. I was getting ready to go on air, to go on the radio, and I felt off. Imagine a turntable. There's a scratch on the record. It skips a beat. It felt like that in my brain. I felt scattered. I felt dizzy. I figured I was just tired, though, because it was really early in the morning. So I went to the washroom, splashed water on my face, came back to my desk, gathered my scripts. And the next thing I remember is waking up in the hospital.
And I have to say that I have never heard a description as vivid as that, and probably because I've never asked. You're also pregnant, as we've said. How's the pregnancy been going so far?
It has been a roller coaster of emotion, that's for sure. Moments of feeling totally exhilarated, joyful, thankful, really giddy about what comes next. And there's also moments of fear and anxiety.
For a woman with epilepsy who is pregnant, what are the dilemmas running through your mind?
My biggest fear is having a seizure and the possibility of that affecting my baby's health or losing the baby. The most commonly used anticonvulsant medications, like the one I'm taking, the level of that medication can bottom out in your system during pregnancy. If I had a seizure, there's a risk of premature labor, the fetal heart rate lowering, and miscarriage. So I've done whatever I can to make this a safe pregnancy.
All of that, which you're going to talk about in some more detail, is part of the backdrop of a really incredible project, and you've produced a documentary about it and your involvement, and it's called The Lullaby Project. Tell me about it.
Well, I would describe the program as a form of music therapy. It's run through Roy Thompson Hall and Massey Hall, and I was paired with a musician. For months, we wrote, collaborated, and then recorded a song, a source of connection and calm during a time that I've really needed that.
So the product of that collaboration is not only a song, which I can't wait to hear, but a wonderful documentary about you and the Lullaby Project. Let's listen to part one.
These chords are quite nice.
Yeah,
do you like them?
I do. I'm sitting next to Liz. The name she goes by as an artist is Lockery. That's her last name. She's the musician the Lullaby Project has paired me with.
That sounds really beautiful.
We're in her studio space where there's a keyboard set up next to the window. We sit here for a couple of hours playing with chord progressions and writing lyrics based on some poetry I brought into the session.
For that first verse, which is absolutely what you've captured with this moment, is that it would be kind of a depiction of the journey to where you are now.
Yeah.
And like the wonderment of that process.
Liz and I have met a couple times online before this point to figure out what I want to write about, what I want to say. I tell her I hope the song will send a message of love to my baby, but also capture what I've gone through. I tell her about my epilepsy and how in me exists a body of memory of my seizures that can be hard to talk about. I describe my family and my mom in particular, who has saved my life more times than I can count. I decide I'm going to revisit these memories to help me write the song.
Come on in.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Feeling the baby bump.
Yeah.
My parents, Cynthia and Bill Hazelwood, live in the same house I grew up in Scarborough, a suburb of Toronto, with a pint-sized dog named after the great country music star.
Hi, Miss Dolly.
I don't know, are you hungry at all, or are you okay? I can open up another soup can.
Sure,
sounds good.
I've told my mom I want to talk with her, that as part of this process of reflection and creation, I'm going back to what I've experienced through the years, that I'm unraveling my body of memory. Of everyone in my life, she's the closest to my epilepsy. She's seen me have the most seizures, starting with the first one when I was 14.
I had just got to bed and I was almost there. I was almost asleep and I could hear a bang. And I thought, should I get up, or something just fell? Or I don't know, something pushed me. I really was like, oh my, I tell you, it was just almost the point of no return as far as sleep. And so, but I got up and I went to the washroom and, oh, you were in the corner and you were jerking and I was just like, I kind of froze, like, what's going on? But then I realized you're choking.
I was choking on my tongue. I remember after that you said that I was to the point where I was losing color. I was starting to turn blue from the choking.
So I put you on your side, but you're still jerking. And I got your dad to call. He came to call an ambulance, and I stayed with you.
I remember waking up in the ambulance. You were saying, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, but you also had this look of terror in your eyes, and I remember that, just how scared you looked. Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was being really calm. There goes my...
I mean, the things you were saying were very calming, but I could see that you were really, really rattled.
Yes, yeah, I was. Yeah.
And I guess when I thought about it through the years, I thought, if you hadn't woken up, if there hadn't been something in you that said, no, 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 get up and check, I would have died.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the realization of that really hit me after that. And I just thought, wow, it was a narrow escape.
Like, I think about that a lot. And the strange thing is that situation is not an isolated situation, not just in the sense that I continued having seizures, but I've had many, many, many times where I've almost died. That was the start of a series of terrifying moments.
Yes.
Please stand clear of the doors.
More than 20 years after that first seizure, I walk onto the subway to get to my first OBGYN appointment. I'm in a groove of cautious optimism. My pregnancy is progressing well. I'm about 4 months along, and I'm healthy. But I have moments when I feel unsettled. I think about how the other week, as I was grocery shopping, my vision started to blur. I got dizzy. So I dropped the produce I had stacked in my arms and bolted out the store. This is it, I thought. It's happening. I need to find somewhere to sit or lie down so I won't fall, so I won't seize and hurt myself. But I didn't have a seizure. My best guess after talking to my doctors was I was experiencing fluctuating blood pressure. That afternoon at the grocery store made something very clear, though. My fear of having a seizure, it may not consume me, but it's always in me, ready to spring to life. And being pregnant brings that fear to the fore, a reminder of why I'm doing the Lullaby Project.
All right, so I have to look for baby. Okay. So when it got kind of swishy, that was baby running away, and that was more through fluid,
okay.
The heartbeat.
Yeah.
And there were all the little noises were movements.
Okay.
Baby was running.
Oh my gosh. Isn't that surreal?
I'm at my OBGYN appointment with my partner, Dave. We look at each other, smiling through our masks. We found out before this appointment we're having a boy. We hugged, told our families, and now week by week, we prepare. Later that day, we start going through boxes of generous donations from family and friends. Boxes full of colorful and cute baby apparel.
Oh my gosh. Cool pair of shorts.
Little cargo pants. Oh, little boots.
These are serious winter boots.
They are.
These are no joke.
Okay, there's still more stuff to open.
When Dave and I were first dating, I told him early on I had epilepsy. Sharing that about myself so soon after meeting is something I would have never done in my teens or my 20s. That's because for a long time I didn't accept it. I was diagnosed a few months after my first seizure with juvenile myoclonic epilepsy. One of the markers of the condition is a jerking motion, often in the upper body. And for me, it happens right before I have a tonic-clonic seizure, where I lose consciousness and shake. Sometimes I experience several seconds of jerking, sometimes just one jerking movement of my hands before I fall to the ground. My diagnosis felt crushing to my teenage self. This is not who I am, I thought. I want to be like everybody else. For a long time, I wouldn't even use the word epilepsy. I would say I had a seizure condition. I wouldn't wear a medical alert bracelet. I didn't want anybody to know. Now, as a 37-year-old, I feel far from that. I'm open about having epilepsy. I accept it as part of me.
I really appreciate your willingness to share and your openness.
On one of our Lullaby Project Zoom calls, I tell Liz this, that I want to capture how far I've come in my journey with epilepsy through music. I tell her my life has been a kaleidoscope of motion, uncontrolled motion of my body, paired with the motion of moving across the country as a journalist. My life has felt so full of vibrancy and so devastating at moments. She says, let's use that.
A lullaby is not typically something that encapsulates those highs and lows, but I really do think that it would be amazing for this song to reflect that journey in like an honest way. Yes, we want it to be something that's like beautiful and comforting for baby now as well, but imagine if it could be something that sheds a little bit of light on the journey as he grows and mm-hmm. comes to understand, you know, a little bit more.
I really like that idea, exactly, of it trying to be as authentic as possible and something that I can sing to him in the early days, but that he can right. maybe listen to down the line, like for years to come. That would be quite something.
Come have a seat. Wonderful. How many weeks long are you?
Dr. Esther Bowie helped start the Lullaby Project in Canada for women with epilepsy. She's also my neurologist and encouraged me to take part in the program. She works at Toronto Western Hospital and is an assistant professor at the University of Toronto. Unlike most neurologists, she sees her patients every month during their pregnancy, which is what we've been doing. Usually it's virtual or on the phone, but today we talk face-to-face.
Okay, so I'm going to go and weigh you now. Now that I have the luxury of having you in person, I'll take your blood pressure as well. And then for now, no change to your medication. And you call me as soon as you get those levels.
Okay, sounds good. One out.
Every month I get a blood test to make sure my epilepsy medication stays at a safe level. If it drops, that could put me and the baby at risk.
That's perfect. It's 120 over 60. Good. Okay.
So far, so good.
We'll be right back.
What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Black Art. This week, the CBC's Julianne Hazelwood takes us on a familiar journey that, for her, is filled with uncertainty and some peril. Julianne is in the late stages of pregnancy. She also has epilepsy. And Julianne is back with me in the studio. You know, one thing, as I was listening to the doc, you know, it was work for you to produce it. But as soon as I heard the chords of the music at the beginning, I had a lump in my throat. Mm. And I'm just wondering, as you listen to this labor of love, what feelings came through your mind?
It's emotional for me as well. I was holding back tears because it was such a cathartic process of really reflecting on so many years, so much of what I've gone through with my journey with epilepsy, and really putting that into the song, channeling all of that in there. So it was very therapeutic.
You talked about the times, how many times you had nearly died. Mm-hmm. And that stopped me in my tracks. And I want to know, as someone with epilepsy, how did that factor into, you know, you figuring out, am I ready to be a mom? Do I want to, as you juggle all the various perils?
It was a long process and a scary process. Seizure control and medication, those were main dilemmas in my mind. I wanted to get my health in a good place, my seizures under control, and get on an epilepsy medication considered safe during pregnancy. And those two steps didn't click into place for years.
People who don't have epilepsy may not know that your best friend is often your neurologist. And as you mentioned, you see Dr. Bowie every month. How important is that relationship with your specialist now, looking back through your pregnancy?
Oh, for me, it's been critical. Trust, mutual respect, feeling like I'm an active member in my care is everything. I remember after my first appointment with Dr. Bowie, I called my partner Dave and I cried. And I said, I feel like I was listened to. Like, we're going to go forward together. And that was something I had very rarely felt before.
So in this next part of your documentary, we're going to hear what it's like with your current neurologist, Dr. Bowie, after some not so great experiences with other neurologists. Let's have a listen.
As Dr. Bowie inputs all my medical metrics onto her computer, we talk about what it's taken to get here. I've always known I wanted to be a mom, but it didn't feel like a possibility for a long time, until last year. That's when I switched epilepsy medications to something safer for pregnancy, something with a lower incidence of birth defects compared to the anticonvulsant I had been taking.
It took you such a long time to get to this point.
Yes.
And how many years, Julianne?
Really, it had been even like a decade. In different provinces that I had lived, when I had different neurologists, this recommendation had come up again and again. And so it was really scary. It felt like just leaping into the unknown. This is the only medication my body has ever known since I was diagnosed with epilepsy. And so it was the fear of a seizure.
That trust in your body is very foreign to many women who have experienced seizures.
With past neurologists, the response was very different. It seemed like they were frustrated by my reluctance to switch medications. One said, what if you have an unplanned pregnancy and end up having a child with severe birth defects to the point where they can't function? How would you feel knowing it's because of you, because you didn't change medications? That neurologist also wanted me to increase my anticonvulsant level. She asked whether I'd be able to live with myself if I killed somebody while driving because I wasn't taking enough medication. Imagine you killed the children in the back seat, she said. I was taken aback, horrified by her words. But the message was clear. She was the doctor, and I should do what she says.
I think that the invisible theme that you describe is very common for a lot of women's journey. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bowie is one of the funerologists who I feel has treated me with dignity and compassion. She wanted to know my concerns about the new medication. She created space for me to voice my fears, and that support helped me make the switch.
Epilepsy is invisible. The concern for what happens with seizures when you're pregnant, and to face that fear again, that's all invisible work. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of physicians really appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's like the tip of the iceberg, and the iceberg moves slowly, but it definitely moves, right? Things change. And so,
Dr. Bowie is doing her best to chip away at that iceberg, connecting women like me with the Lullaby Project.
I personally know, as many others, you know, the power of music. But there's something very special about music creation. And so when I learned about the Lullaby Project at Roy Thomson Hall, which originated from Carnegie Hall in the States, I was fascinated by what they were trying to do for their marginalized women, teen moms, who were struggling with many issues outside of just health issues alone. And I made a connection to imagine what it would be like to use their program and collaborate and apply it to our population of women with epilepsy during pregnancy. I wanted to see if music could actually transform a woman's journey, allow her to redefine her narrative for her children and her children's children through Lullaby process. I've heard firsthand the wonderful and powerful transformative experiences women have, that we can use music as medicine rather than just medicines alone. And by doing so, I wanted to actually measure this. I didn't want to just have a feel-good project. I wanted science and data. And so we're measuring this, seeing if the process of lullaby making can impact quality of life scores, empowerment scores, anxiety, depression scores. And so I'm hoping to use this data to advocate for the next generation of women facing pregnancy and epilepsy.
Dr. Bowie has just launched her research project. She's helped match the program with participants like me for a couple years, but now she'll begin to measure the impact. She says there's a growing body of research around music as medicine, including a study she worked on that shows listening to Mozart may reduce seizure frequency in people with epilepsy. This new study will also look at how the program affects women's seizure control, something I struggled with for the longest time.
Well, we've walked this block so many times, you and I, when you're growing up.
I know, so many times through the years. I remember coming home in my early 20s when my seizures were most out of control. My mom and I would walk the block. She'd take care of me. I'd slowly recover. That was when I was having a seizure a week. Then, after I graduated from university, I started having seizure clusters, multiple ones a day. By my late 20s, my seizures slowed. Instead of having minutes or days in between them, it became years. It gave me incredible hope. I was convinced I would never have a seizure again. But then I did. A reminder that after a long stretch without them, a breakthrough seizure is always possible for me. My last one happened in the early morning 6 years ago. I was working at CBC in Fredericton, New Brunswick. As I was about to go on air, I collapsed.
Well, in those days, I listened to you every day. And so I tuned in and it was somebody else. And that threw me off. And I started to worry. Then we got the phone call. It was horrible. It was horrifying. They told us you had a seizure in the office and you hit your head against the desk. And I said, I'm going to get there as soon as I can. And we got me to the airport. I just like threw a bunch of things in a bag that I thought I might need, and we were off. So the whole time I was worried. I didn't know what to expect, because not only did you have a seizure, but it sounded like you really had a bad collapse. You hit your head so badly that you had black eyes.
I certainly remember my black eyes. My face was just very swollen. The first thing I remember is opening my eyes in the hospital and seeing red, a good friend, and saying, "Did I have a seizure?" And he said, "Yes." And I just cried. I just cried. I mostly felt devastated, psychologically crushed. The best way to put it in terms of how it affected me in the months that followed is I retreated, like retreating from everybody around me, and felt really, really depressed. I was inconsolable.
I didn't leave until I felt comfortable that you'd be okay. I mean, you were still struggling, but it was a really, really dark time.
I still worry about breakthrough seizures. And at my next appointment with Dr. Bowie, I find out the biggest risk factor for pregnant women with epilepsy, medication levels dropping dramatically, has happened to me. I plan with Dr. Bowie to go on more medication right away. And we talk about how I have an increased risk of seizures during labor. All of this makes me feel unsteady. But then I think about the song, and a surge of joy and anticipation runs through me. I try to channel that spectrum of light and darkness into the music. Hi.
How can I help you?
What
session are you
in? I'm Julianne, here for the Lullaby Project.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Okay, great. I have arrived at the recording studio. I am feeling excited about doing this. Nervous as well. I'm by no means the greatest singer, so I think this whole process, it's just been an exercise in vulnerability and reflection. Writing the lullaby, being aware of some of my fears through pregnancy and in having epilepsy. I was practicing throughout the afternoon, and I'm in my third trimester now. As I'm singing it, I can feel the baby kicking. It's a special thing, knowing that this piece is about my journey to this point and is for him.
I like to start with some lip trills. I'm going to start like... Lots of breath.
After we warm up, I stand in a studio, Liz on the other side of the glass. I hear the track in my headphones, and I sing.
I once was just as small as you. I saw the world brand new. It held me as I grew. Since then, a lot has changed. Things go forward and back again. It's all brought me to you. A kaleidoscope of motion, stillness and commotion. I do it all again. The road to you, I've been over, round and through. I'm just taking in the view. 'Cause now it's your road too. And we can dance, or why not take a chance and fly because we can. I'll be there where you land.
After the recording session, I sit on the deck with my mom, each of us sipping a cup of tea. What has it been like watching me progress through this pregnancy and looking more and more pregnant every time I see you?
I think there's just such a serenity about you now. So I just I'm really so happy.
Before I go, Mom puts her hand on my belly and feels for kicks. I can't stop thinking about who this little person will become. how soon I will be his mom and finally be able to sing my lullaby to him.
I'm grateful to be on this road with you.
That was the CBC's Julianne Hazelwood. Since that conversation with Julianne, she's given birth to a beautiful baby boy named Wesley.
Doing a bit of a stretch?
She's already putting her wonderful voice to good use.
Okay, Wes. Let's do our lullaby, okay? I once was just as small as you. I saw the world.
That's our show this week. This episode of White Coat Blackheart was produced by senior producer Colleen Ross, with help from Jeff Goods, Sujata Berry, and Stephanie Dubois. Technical support was by Oronde Williams. Special thanks to our CBC colleague, Julianne Hazelwood, for sharing her story.
It's all brought me to you.
That's Medicine from My Side of the Gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
Motion. Is that a smile? I love you, Wes.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.